The podcast you are about to listen to discusses comic books and comic book related media. Be warned, the following will review art, plot, and themes, and will therefore contain spoilers of the materials discussed. Welcome to Comics League International. Is Brent and Lydia talk Starman?
Starman! Woohoo! Volume 2.
Yes, we're going to talk some Starman. And yeah, we're presented by Comics League International, and that's the Facebook page you can find all our hip happening things at, aka
hip happening things.
Stuff. Yeah. So why don't we just dive into it?
Yeah, dive is a good word because it's very nautical. it's a very nautical issue.
That's very good. I didn't even notice the pun. That is very nice of you.
Yay. You can count on me, yes.
Excellent. So, I guess, do we have a history lesson today, or...
For what? For the new issue? Right, I get it. Yeah.
96?
What happened in June 1996?
Yes, because one thing that happened is I turned 15.
Oh, good for you!
Yes.
I was 8. I was 8. Oh my! Oh, but yeah, I did pick up one thing.
Hmm. If it was me turning 15, then I'll be kind of surprised.
No, actually, it's about the Nintendo 64 going on sale in Japan.
Wow.
Yeah. Were you ever a gamer? Did you like games?
I did like games. I was more of... I liked especially Final Fantasy and stuff like that. I guess I was more of like a... What would you call it, like a passive gamer? Like, I enjoyed them, but I wasn't as hardcore as a lot of folks were.
Yeah, same. Exactly the same. I didn't own a Nintendo 64, but I think that my dad got me a... What do you call those? A Super Famicom?
Yeah. In the States, they were the Super Nintendos.
Right. Yeah, and I think mine was a Super Nintendo, because... Ooh. I'm looking at the picture for Super Nintendo and it looks like mine, whereas the Famicom doesn't look like mine. Mm-hmm. So I actually do still have my Super Nintendo at home.
Aww.
I remember playing it even after I got married, so I had it when I was 8, so I got married when I was 21. That means, yeah, it was still working.
Wow.
Yeah. And I'm 28 this year, so I hope it's still working. I didn't go back and play it this year. I mean, when I went back to Singapore, I didn't dig it out.
Trying the juice?
No, I didn't. I hope it's still working. It's actually the entire reason why I got interested in Japan. So
was the Super Nintendo?
Yes, actually, that was my entryway, my entryway, you know,
wow.
into Japan. So, yeah, it really does bring a lot of memories, and that's why, you know, I picked it up. It's not the Super Nintendo per se, but it was the one after it, I think, the 64.
N64? Now, yeah. I never had an N64, but some friends did. And, mm-hmm. you know, I'll admit, I spent a lot of times playing especially GoldenEye during high school at their place. And then in college, when, like, Mario Tennis and the Super Smash Brothers came out,
played
a lot of those. But outside of that, I don't really remember what else, you know, really what there was on the N64.
Okay. I don't... I can't really, even though, you know, today's pickup is on the 64, but I can only talk about the Super Nintendo. So my first few games were those combo packs where there would be like six games in one cartridge. And it was probably not very legal, but...
you never know, depending on how old the games were.
True, that's true. One of my favorites was the NBA.
Just NBA?
Like, yeah, I mean, it was like the basketball game, and I really loved that one.
Was this the one where you could also, like, punch people?
No.
Yeah, that was like NBA Jam, where you could also, like, run around and, like, shove people and punch them to get the ball.
No, not that one. No. That did not happen. You could swipe the ball, but you didn't punch. But, yeah. And then, after that, I think my second game that came a few months later was the Sailor Moon fighting game, and that was the beginning of the downward spiral into Japan and all things Japanese. Yeah, because it was a Japanese game. There was no English on it, so I couldn't read it. But I knew who the sailor soldiers were. Mm-hmm. So I just, like, you know, went by, followed my gut. And after that, I actually learned how... I taught myself how to read katakana and hiragana just so I could play the game.
Nice.
Yeah, and I was 11. So, yeah, that was fun. Oh, yeah, I was 11. 10, 11 or so, I can't remember. But, yeah, so, yay, games. Nintendo, I think I really do owe a lot to Nintendo, if you look at it that way, you know, being in Japan and everything, and being a speaker of Japanese. And yeah.
So, Nintendo, if you're listening, thank you.
Yes, I am perfectly open to being your ambassador and signing a contract worth millions of yen to promote Nintendo things on. You know, no, Nintendo is not doing very well.
Well, you know, they've got that new the new thing coming out soon that seems to be pretty neat.
Okay, I shouldn't say they're not doing very well. They are doing very well, but they have to face so many more competitors than they did back here in June 96.
True, because, 96, it was really only, what, like, Sega?
Yes. It was really just...
Was Sega. PlayStation out yet? I think it might have been.
PlayStation came out in... It was fifth generation. Oh, yeah, so it might have been the same time. Yeah. I think so. Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. Wow, those were the days. I seriously don't know if, you know, if a 15-year-old now was listening to us, would they actually know what we're talking about?
I think they'd know, like, enough of the big words. You know, kind of like, even as a kid, I knew what Atari was.
Okay.
You know, if someone brought up, like, Pong, I'd be like, yeah, I've heard of Pong.
Right.
And you'd be like, oh, yeah, you know, the N64 by Nintendo. Yeah, that's that old one.
The PlayStation came out in 94, 95. 95 in North America, though. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So, a 15-year-old would have been born in 2001. That's not too bad. That's just, you know, 5-6 years after... the fifth generation.
I feel so old.
It's okay. You know what? I mean, we are reading comics from 96. Like, old things live on, so...
And that's one of the themes of Starman, in a way.
That's true. You know? That's very true.
I mean, just think if... Wow, that's kind of scary. If this comic were coming out now, Jack might actually be searching for a pristine N64 or Super Nintendo.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Oh, wow.
I got one of the Zelda editions. It's great.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, that's true. Huh, interesting.
Speaking of Starman,
mm-hmm.
Here is we're looking at issue 19 today.
Yeah.
And you know, the synopsis for issue 19 is it's pretty short because mm-hmm. this is a very straightforward issue of Jack being on a beach, being rescued from his deserted island by a lone pirate in a boat. A silent pirate who turns out to be David!
Woo! David, long time no see!
Yep, for we're in our Talking with David 96 issue, where Jack joins a pirate ship, and then on this little pirate ship, they talk about things for a while and have lots of, you know, coded speech until they attack a merchant ship. And bam, boom, bang, lots of verse and song that I kept on wondering, did James Robinson write this, or is this just an old song I don't know? And then at the end of that, David's all like, well, that was fun. And then we get a special visitor who I don't even want to give away yet. I know, like, this is a spoiler zone and everything, but I just, yeah, it's such a nice little thing, that's that final appearance.
Mm.
And the issue ends probably with the audience feeling a little moved.
Nice one.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Brent.
You're welcome, Lydia. So what do you think about the cover?
I was very puzzled as to why those two people in the foreground looked so similar, but...
The guy with the goggles and the yellow, green, and red pirate.
Yes. Yeah. But after I opened it up, I realized why. Yeah, because they're brothers!
Yay!
But they're not twins, right? No.
No. I like that, though. I like that they do look like a family.
Mm.
Yeah.
I actually thought it was the same person. You know, at first glance, I thought it was one of those, what's his name, who went back and to the one with the past version of himself, the cop.
Scalp Hunter and Matt.
Yeah. Yes. I thought it was one of those things at first.
I could see that, yeah.
Yeah. But no, it was just... Yeah, but I actually think it's a very artistic cover. I don't know if that's... I mean, it's very detailed. The faces of each of these characters, these five faces, even the skeleton ones.
Mm.
Yeah. They look different.
Each of them. Yeah, they all look different. They look great. I like how, you know, one of them seems to, with the skin flicking off, seems to have like a little goatee. And the one with the sword, like, almost seems to be surprised, like, looking off somewhere off to the left.
Mm-mm.
It's like, what?
Yeah.
He doesn't have eyes, but he kind of looks like he has eyes.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned this before, but it was like how... did you say, like, acting out or something like that? Like, you know, each of, like, they are all skeletons, but these three, but they look different.
Mm.
You know, that's why that's what I've really come to appreciate as I read Starman.
Yeah.
So.
The thing that I kept wondering, not so much on this cover, but kind of through the issue together, was, I think when did the really strong, like, kind of, you know, peanut butter and jelly nature of pirates and ghosts?
Parts of the
Caribbean really kind of, like, brought it, I think, to the forefront of culture.
Mm-hmm.
But here we are with pirates and ghosts, and they really do just work so well together.
Yeah, I know what you mean. The the vibe that they give off is very, it's very classic, mm-hmm. I think. Mm. Oh, excuse me, runny nose.
Oh, no okay. problem. 'Tis the season.
Yeah, what did you like about the cover?
Oh, pretty much all the stuff you mentioned. Like, I'll be honest, I didn't quite notice the brotherly look, but once you pointed out, I was like, you're absolutely right. I just liked the waves in the background even of the ship. That kind of really give it that kind of depth. It's like feels like a small detail, but it's there. Yeah. You know, I love just the kind of layering, and how it very much feels like in the moment. I mean, this feels like something is happening, partly because, like you said, of all that acting.
Mm, yeah. And one big thing that we just kind of, like, did not mention was David is the only one that's in full color.
Yeah.
And I think it just really highlights the fact that this is his issue. Mm, this is he is the main character in this issue, or it's all about him.
Yeah,
well, yeah. So that's really nice.
Mm, with the with the talking with David issues. Yeah, he's our only little bit to break up the black and whiteness.
Mm. There was one more right before this, was there? Like one scene or something.
Two others? Because there was the one where they were fighting in the graveyard.
Right, yeah.
One after that?
I can only remember the one in the graveyard.
Okay, that might be the only one we've had then.
Mm. But you know what, with David, the thing is, for readers of the Starman issue, for the Starman Volume 2, where if you started from issue 0, you would remember David as the one who died.
Yeah. It's
like, he just died in the first, in issue 0, and but then you know that he is what you would call, I'm not sure if I'm using it right, a page turner, in stage, I think, in Japanese stage, where you, there's always like this small character that when I watch a lot of theater in Japan, so I don't know, it's usually Western works, it's Japanese, so I don't know if this applies to English stage as well,
yeah.
But there's always this small character, I wouldn't say small, but not so major, not so minor, but very key character that kind of propels the story along. Like, in Starman, I think it might be, it used to be the Shade, and then he got a bigger role, and then now I think it's a little bit like David is the one. So it's always like this person who was the catalyst for a lot of things. So, yeah, so I think for Starman, David, because of his death, you know, Jack had to step up. And if David didn't die, or if he didn't exist, there wouldn't be a story. So I think that's a very clever way to use a character.
Yeah, yeah, and I like how they keep bringing him back.
Yeah, yeah.
To in a way, not let us forget what did start all of this. And you know, and it really kind of further sinks home those the importance of family in the Starman world.
Yeah. Okay.
Shall we jump in?
Let's jump in. Yeah. Jack.
I like the fact that he's shielding his eyes from the sun on this first page.
He is. Do you know, I didn't realize that this was Jack until he got on the boat. But now that I'm like looking back, and I'm starting to look at all this detail, and I realize his boxers.
Yep.
Are those leaves or something? I can't tell. Or stalks in flight?
They could be. They for a moment I was wondering if they're supposed to be like a stylized, like, what do you call them? Like the French floret?
Right. Oh, what do you call them?
Yeah.
I know exactly what you're talking about, but I'm not even... I can't remember. Fleur something.
Fleur-de-lis.
Yes, yes, yes. Is that how I pronounce it?
Probably not. I do not speak the French.
Speak the French. Yeah, neither do I.
It might be like a fleur-de-lis or something like that.
Fleur-de-lis. It means a flower of the lily.
Aww.
Yeah. So, yeah. Upside down, fleur-de-lis. So, he is in... His clothes are in tatters, and he's waving down this pirate boat.
Yay. And on the next page, we see that pirate boat coming. And, you know, I've talked how much I like it when they do this. And I still like the kind of the moving panels where one part will be the same and then another part is constantly shifting.
Yeah.
And I really like how, I guess to just kind of go for the next page as well, I really like how slow everything feels.
Yeah. Oh, it's amazing that you can put speed into something this static, you know, it's amazing. Yeah. All right. Yeah. And then, and by the way, it's all black and white. It's all black and white.
Yep, all black and white.
Yeah.
And again, just everything just feels so, I don't want to say sluggishly paced, because that feels like a negative, but I mean, it's slow.
It is. Wait, can we take a moment to say something about the black and whiteness of this?
Oh, let's do it.
Yeah, we say it's black and white, but it's actually not black and white, because it's like, you know, shades of is that, what's the name of that tan, brown, grayish color?
Sepia?
Taupe!
Taupe?
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Yes, beige brown, you know, that. Taupe, and the shades of it, and I think it might have been actually tricky to do the coloring for this. It's beautiful even though it's like taupe. Taupe and black and white and grays. The dimension and everything. Yes, sorry.
I know in some comics where they have like the black and white and the shades, they refer to things as like gray wash. And I don't know, but then again, since I really don't know on the art production side how things are done, you know, I don't know if that means just a special type or if this is doing the art with the grays. I wish I could add more insight into it other than just, here's a random word. You know, all I can say is I'm pretty sure this time they're still doing more traditional colors rather than digital colors. Or digital coloring might have just been starting.
Let's see.
In its infancy.
I see. Wow. Didn't know that. Didn't even know that that was like digital color and traditional color. I see. Okay. So, back to the story. Jack gets on the boat.
Yeah.
There's a pirate. And they have a conversation.
Yep. And it's mostly, their conversation is just good old Jack rambling. And again, goodness, James Robinson does a great job here of throwing out the exposition. In a, you know, non-cluttered way. Like the whole, like, I've been on that island for a good while. At least I think it was. Blah, 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 blah. You know, let's get the audience cut. I thought it was really well done with the ramble.
That's true. Huh. Yeah. I'm just reading it now, and yeah, that's true. And over here, he doesn't know who the pirate is yet, and then he's just like rambling. to him in a very Jack fashion.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. And then he says, this might seem like a crazy thing to ask, but haven't you seen a brightly costumed superhero around, have you? Green and red, glowing hand rod. ring any bells?
And then on our next page, we do get, you know, it's almost impossible not to see the reveal on the page flip.
Right. Yeah. I get what you mean. It's like, what? Ta-da! Right, and then it's Dave.
Mm.
Psych. That's kind of old, right?
Oh yeah. We were saying psych when I was a kid, which is great because, you know, it's kind of a jerky, dorky thing to be doing it in the 90s, and having Dave do it just feels like the perfect older brother. Psych.
Yeah, I get what you mean.
Mm.
Never used it in my entire life because, you know, not my culture.
Sounds almost, it's not my culture, I'm not using that.
I don't know, we've never really adopted the finer mannerisms of North America.
I'm saying you could be the one to bring it out there.
Just hello, Commonwealth!
Hey, here, have a dollar. Psych!
Yeah, so why we're bringing it up is because David says it when Jack he talks like, oh, have you seen Starman? He's like, ta-da, I'm Starman, and he ripped off his pirate costume. Yeah, hey, he turns like, hey, it's Technicolor. Yeah. Okay, what's next?
I do want to say I love I almost wanted to call him Tony for a moment. Jack's happy face.
Right,
when he's hugging Dave.
Mm.
Just that little bit.
Yeah. Ha! David!
And
yeah.
When we turn the page, we get our shot of the pirate ship.
Mm.
It's a nice looking ship.
It is. Sea shanty kind of. I don't know. It makes. Whenever I see pirate ships, it does.
You want to sing a shanty?
Yeah, I don't really know any, but yeah.
I feel ya. I feel ya. Like, I wish part of, you know, life involved like more just pub drinking of, like, you know, not like popular music, but just like shanties and more old timey songs. You know.
Yeah. Me too. Yeah.
So on our. Our splash page here, our double page spread, we do have our title card, which tells us that this issue was written by James Robinson, penciled by Tony Harris, inked by Wade Von Grobiger, colored by Gregory Wright. Our letters were done by Oakley /NJQ. It was edited by Archie Goodwin, who was the assistant editor was Chuck Kim.
Mm.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
And a fine crew they were.
Arr.
Aboard the SSDC Starman.
Arr, aye, aye, Cap'n. Oh, what a horrible, horrible, horrible mimicry.
I was having this moment, like, if we did the whole show in pirate voices, how quickly would people stop playing it?
No, we don't want to do that.
No.
It's suicide! We're gonna walk the plank! Alright.
And this is, you know, it's nice, and they have pirate talk, and it's fun. Although, you know, it is one of those things where I kind of feel like at least until kind of late on the next page or on the second page after the big spread, I don't think they're really saying anything too terribly important.
Yeah, it just felt like a recap. You know, I think it's one of those issues where if you don't know anything about Starman and then you pick it up, this is where, like, it helps you catch up.
Yeah, yeah, it does. And the stuff that could kind of be important is also just more of, like, foreshadowing that doesn't really go anywhere. Like, why would I need a greater understanding of being a pirate on the high seas? You can't say. Bingo! Obviously, it's for some future event.
Yeah,
and I mean, it reads well. This certainly isn't a dig on it. But just when you're discussing the finer points of the issue, it's like, hey, they got some good dialogue. But, you know, it doesn't really have a lot of... It's a tasty bone, but there's not necessarily a lot of meat on a lot of these pages.
Right, right. I know exactly what you mean. I feel ya. I feel ya. Yeah. But I did, like, you know, I like some of the tidbits that they threw in, like how Dr. Phosphorus regards Ted Knight as his mortal enemy.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and how Ted didn't seem to be very affected by the radiation or something like that. What is Ted? You know. You start to...
But then they also kind of threw in the thing that, like, oh, well, maybe when his powers got changed, he lost the radiation aspect and just became, you know, a heat thing.
Right, right. Yeah.
I really thought there was the nice moment. One of my little favorite moments, along with the one you mentioned, was the Jack finding out the connection between Grundy,
Pinkerton,
and Ted.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a nice little thing, also kind of for... I think it does another little great job of showing how much Jack doesn't quite know about the legacy.
He's
following in. And also, you know, there had to be some fans when the Grundy thing happened were like, man, I can't believe Jack is just... Wow, that's got to be a slap in the face to the dad. And this little bit of dialogue really, you know, kind of makes it clear, like, Jack isn't just being a jerk. He just doesn't know.
Yeah. I know what you mean. And I think it also tells you how big of a person Ted is. You know, to take in Grundy and to... I don't know, it just felt like... Don't you think it felt like he saw Grundy as somebody different? As he was almost protective of Grundy, even?
I think he kind of was getting there. But it was all about... I mean, I love that scene in the hospital from, was it last issue? Where he was protective, but he has so much... You know, He still got some strong feelings in his heart towards Grundy and what Grundy did.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move on.
Move on. Where shall we stop moving?
Okay.
We got a lot of the catch up. I'm trying to buy a store. I'm doing this. Blah blah blah.
Yeah. Ha ha ha, that's a ha 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 where they spot a merchant ship. I think that might be a good cutoff point.
Yeah.
Okay.
Where the where he does the transformation or with a ha ha ha?
Oh, that's a transformation?
Well, you know where David goes all from Starman David to Captain David.
Oh, right. Let's take it from the transformation. Wait a minute, this transformation thing, it's not like a ripping off a costume or whatever, right? It's just one of, like, one of those, like, ding, and then...
Yeah, I took it as ghost powers.
Right, okay. Ghost powers, good job. Yeah. Alright.
So, there is an interesting thing that I kind of, you know, I appreciate the action of it, and I kind of know it's in the lesson of you need to know what a pirate went through, but it is kind of an interesting thing to have our hero basically spend an issue where his only real action is to attack a merchant ship.
True. Well, then again, this isn't like a regular issue.
True.
I mean, it has a song. And, like, ghost pirates. And,
yeah.
You know. Oi! There's this scene where all the skeletons are saying, oi!
Oi!
Yeah, in response.
Those black-hearted skeletons.
Yeah.
Hee-hee-hee.
Yeah, so... I actually thought this part was pretty fun.
Oh, it's totally fun. The attack.
Right? Yes. And the idea of having that shanty, you know, weaving through the action.
Yeah.
I wonder how it sounds. I wonder if they made a tune for it. Oh my, we should do a song for this.
Do a shanty?
Yeah, we should totally come up with a tune, and
then we can. That sounds like a lot of work. I love the idea of it, but it's like, wow. Because would it just be like, so load the cannon and powder up, load the cannon and powder up, or load the cannon and powder up, for the sea is ours, boys.
Oh, wow. Yeah, let's do it. We should totally do it.
If it weren't quite this long, you'd have an easier time convincing me. Because it's...
Done.
It's long. It's long.
Cut it.
We might be able to come back through. We'll see what the ending credits are. And if it's the normal one, you'll know we ran out of time. And if our ending credits are a pirate ballad... I
how would that sound, though?
Amazing.
For the sea is ours. I have no idea what I just did. But that's the last... That for the sea, this sea is ours, boys. Mm. That's the last line. And then they take over the ship.
Yeah.
And they win.
It really... Oh, man. The almost like the... I'm thinking like the John Woo style picture on that last fighting page where you've got Dave and Jack back to back and the muskets, the pistols are blazing.
Yeah.
It just... Man... Seeing this just really makes me want a Tony Harris pirate book.
Oh, now that you mention it, I suddenly remember that Tony Harris was a fan of pirates, and this probably was very fun for him to do.
I gotta wonder, like, how that conversation went. If it and this might even be in some of the back matters of the omnibuses I got on my shelf, but was it just like, hey, I'm gonna give you, you know, a whole scene of pirates to just do stuff whatever you want, piratey-wise.
That's true. It might have been that. We see what you did there, Tony Harris!
I mean, who knows? It could have even been, like, one of those things of, like, can they be ghost pirates, please?
Please? Then the editors were like, yeah, of course, and then he wrote a little shanty. Yeah.
In my head, Tony Harris was totally wearing a pirate hat when he drew this issue.
Oh, I hope he was. Maybe his pencils were, well, I don't know. Those, but that skull and crossbones, they had those prints on them, and he's surrounded by a mug, a coffee mug, and and a stationery, and that's, you know, all piratey and stuff like that. Aww. Yeah, that would be very ideal. It's making him like a little boy. I mean, I don't know if you ever visited the Ghibli Museum, and then you get to see this the working space of Hayao Miyazaki. Yeah, it does feel like that. I mean, like he's surrounded by those by his inspirations.
Yeah,
and he smoked a lot of cigarettes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so things like that, you know. I'd be very curious to know what it's like in the artist's craft space.
They did, I saw a YouTube video once, total tangent from the issue, but it was about different authors and what their office area looks like. From the folk who like things just packed with knickknacks and things like that, to those who like almost just complete sterile environments.
Whoa,
like,
okay.
No distractions.
Okay.
It was a neat little thing that, you know, I'd be able to find again.
Yeah. All right. So, and then back to the story.
Where we find out it's Jack's birthday, and Jack got a gift.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I actually knew who it was going to be at the end of this page.
Yeah?
Yeah, I did. I don't know why, but I did.
It's such a good moment.
You know. Let's bask in it for a moment.
I mean, everything on the page leading up to it and the actual reveal where, like David, his face, he just looks happy. You know, like he doesn't look really necessarily overly smug with it, but it's just look what I did, and then just that expression on Jack's face, the wide open and the eyes, and the way they like the eyes themselves just look kind of moist, you know?
Yeah.
And then we get the reveal.
It's Mom!
Aww.
Yeah. Yeah. Is she crying? I couldn't tell. I don't think so.
I don't know. It's hard to say. Like, it's hard to say. Is that supposed to be like a little bit of just the signs of age underneath her eyes, or is that supposed to be like the slight brimming of tears?
Yeah, I can't tell. But, you know, no matter, it's still a very pretty picture.
It really is, and just, I mean, imagine what this must be like, because what we did, the math, and Jack was, what, like 5 or 6?
Mm-mm.
When his mom died?
Yeah. And can we go on to the next page?
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah, the part where you can see him crying as he runs to his mom. That's very nice. It's like he's a child again, you know? He's so excited and uninhibited joy. That's really nice. Yeah. I don't see. I don't react to my mom like that. So. I don't know. Aww.
I'm close to it. I'm close to it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Maybe because I'm Asian.
And your heart is made of steel. Oh, you Asians.
I mean, seriously, I need to, but then again, it might be true, a part of, we're just not very, my mom and I, we don't have this relationship. My dad and I, we are a little bit more open, but
So when you see your dad, yeah. do you uh-huh. run down and get teary-eyed?
No.
Oh, you ate!
Yeah, you can say it. It's fine. I think it actually really applies.
See, no, I think we almost need to do a public service announcement to be like, hi, we here at Brent and Lydia Talk Starman do not believe that all Asians are cold-hearted towards their parents. Just for the record, we're not willing to say what percentage, like, their parents are get emotional towards them. We're just going to say Lydia falls in the other percentage.
Yeah. No, you know what? I really grew up thinking my mom's heart was made of steel because no, she doesn't like hugs. Mm. And she kind of, things like that. I know of Asian families who are very loving and very expressive, but my family isn't one of them. And so, yeah. And I don't know, I always think that Asians living in outside of Asia and Asians living in Asia are a little bit different. Mm. So it really depends. I don't know. Don't take my word for it. I happen to be one of those Asians and part of the Chinese diaspora who settled in Singapore. And yeah, so that's my kind of Asian.
I am too terrified to actually comment on this. I sometimes, like, I don't know, if you're talking about, like, academic stuff, I'd be like, oh, well, yes, you know, studies have shown, blah, 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 blah. But other than that, like, all I can really say is, I think my parents are, you know, both affectionate towards me and my brother and also affectionate towards each other.
Right.
And I think that was a really surprising to my wife who's Japanese,
right.
when she first kind of found that out or just saw that, like, you know, I mean, they're still warm to each other. I mean, her parents are like they're lovely people.
Mm-hmm. I get what you mean, yeah, because like I'm Asian.
Yeah,
but it's like a little in between cordial and what's that word? Familiar. I know what I mean. Not exactly affectionate or living.
Yeah.
Yeah, like recently I went to my friend's house. My friends are South Africans. Mm-hmm. And I think they've been married for a while. And the husband got home. I was with the wife at home with the kids. When the husband got home, they actually kissed each other on the cheek.
Mm.
And I was like, oh, wow, that won't happen in my house. I mean, when there's a guest, when I'm there, you know, if I have friends around, I would never kiss my husband anywhere.
Thanks for specifying. That's...
You know, for those of you who don't know, I'm already married. I've been married for 7 years. I've never kissed my husband in front of people. It's so funny.
Every now and then I can steal a peck. Every now and then I can steal a peck when people are around. Mm-hmm. When there's that kind of look of like, people, what?
Yeah, I know.
I'm like, hey, you know.
Yeah. So, anyways,
back to the story. Yeah, it's a beautiful moment. And then just that final page with Dave doing the anytime, the end. Like even that just feels so appropriate.
Yeah. I think it's actually really sweet that Dave and Jack, they get on so well after Dave died. So, because if you remember, they didn't really get along when Dave was alive, and that was such a pity. But you know, the fact that they sort of get a second chance. That's really nice. Yeah. Very nice thing that Dave did.
Yeah, it's a really nice thing. I like how it does explore that relationship. And I mean, they just to give that little bit of a preview, the talking with David, they do continue throughout the series.
Okay.
I'm not sure if they're yearly or not, but I know we do have they're fairly regular.
Okay. Good to know.
Yes. All right.
And that's the end, actually.
That's the end.
Very straightforward issue. Yeah.
Good. Overall, what did you think?
I thought it was a really fun issue. Breath of fresh air, I think, in a way. Nice break from all the drama.
Yes.
And the killings and stuff like that. Just a feel good episode, you know. So I liked it. How about you?
I really like it. I think it packs a nice little emotional punch there. And they cut it off at just the right point. You know, I'll admit that this goes with any type of reading I'm doing. Any type of reading I doing. I do. I'm never the biggest fan of verse in my reading. You know, like when things just kind of break into poetry. But I think it worked here. You know, admittedly, I found myself skimming some of the verses a bit more, but you know, it's still fun. It's a nice change up.
Yeah. My thoughts exactly. So, ding. Good
Yay.
Job.
Well, then why don't we start wrapping things up? Where can they find you on the internets?
You can find me on Twitter at Quek Channel, Q-U-E-K Channel, and Instagram and YouTube and Facebook. My handle is the same across all these platforms. How about you, Brent?
You can find me on multiple platforms as well. Unfortunately, my name is always a little different. You can find me on Twitter at Dead Troubadour. You can find me my main homepage is deadlytroubadour.com, and then, you know, on Facebook, well, of course you can follow this show, go to this show's page, which is the Comics League International page, and like us there. You can also go to my Brent Author Brent Thomas Author page on Facebook, you know, like it there. And you know what, if you're doing all those things and want to show me and Lydia a little bit of support, why don't you go to our iTunes, where the Comics League International, where you can subscribe to this and leave us a little rating and a review. Give us some feedback.
Yeah.
Ooh, I also have a Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/Brent Thomas and want to just put a little tip in the tip jar, that would help. That would help.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay.
Well, I guess until next time, where we have, it's going to be a slightly different show next time. Because, you know, the next podcast we're doing, there's there's three short stories in a way. They add up to around the same as an issue, but these are just three short stories that appeared in the Showcase Anthology series featuring writing by James Robinson and Lydia's favorite character,
Shade.
Yes, so we're gonna capture those three, all in our next podcast, where we continue talking about the Starman epic.
Okay.
So until then, bye.
Yeah. Bye.
Story to show that, but it kind of. It feels like there could have been a bit more of an effort to actually show him thinking. Because there's a lot more effort showing him punch him in the face.
Oh, that's true. Huh. Yeah, he only really thinks at that in that scene where he's in Billy's office.
Yeah. And even there, it's less of him thinking and more of him saying he had done some thinking.
Agreed.
Since I've been kind of negative about the art, I do want to point out that in the scene in the office, that lower left-hand panel where Ted's kind of sitting and kind of slouching and Red standing behind him, I really like that panel. The kind of almost, you know, you can feel the disappointment in himself coming off of Ted, and the way almost the like fatherliness of Red as he stands behind but not quite like knowing what to do. I think that was really, really well done, that moment.
That broodiness. That's good. I see. As we move on to, you know, through all these issues, I think I kind of get, like, you know, what catches your attention, what catches my attention. That's interesting to find out as well.
Yeah. It's interesting when they overlap, or I think we've had lots of times in this issue where you've picked up on stuff that I completely glossed over, like the right angles and other things.
Nice. Yeah. Okay. So what's next?
More punching?
Yes. You're talking about that page of the answers, is it?
Yeah. Page?
Okay.
Another airplane.
I live very close to an Air Force base. Do you call them Air Force bases? Because in Japan, they don't really have an Air Force. They have a division of the Self-Defense Forces that... I don't know. It's one of those things. Japan doesn't have an army.
Is it what do they call it? The SD? Well, that's off the subject. That's off the subject. SDAF, is it? Or... Ah, well.
Yes, SDF. Yeah. Jietai. Well, you know. Law enforcement. Just like what Starman does.
Yeah, I almost wanted to join up just to get my own cosmic rod.
Oh, but you know, law enforcement and the military are two different things, so it's actually different.
Exactly.
So wait a minute. So Starman, he's leaning towards law enforcement, right? So he's like more with the police. Okay.
Yes.
The superheroes and the police on one side. Then you have the military on the other side. I'm so hungry. Random.
See, now I'm wondering, like, how much do I just start rambling about, like, well, actually, there have been several times where the idea of, you know, government-sponsored superheroes has been run. In fact, Roy Thomas in his All-Star Squadron from the 80s used the idea of the blah, 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 blah.
Government spot. You mean, wait, that's actually one thing that I've been wondering about Starman. Where do they get their funds from, you know? Where does Ted make so much money to make his rods and stuff?
I'm not sure if they ever really answer that. I think one of the things I've heard, I can't remember if this is for Ted in specific, but a lot of the science heroes is they have various patents in various fields. And there's lots of different heroes. For example, to go back to, I think, our last times past where they fought Ragdoll. I want to say two of those heroes there are also basically either CEO types. And just independently wealthy. One of the guys was a practicing physician. And the other guy, I think, was just a, you know, I'm a police scientist. So, but there you go.
I see.
Tangent! Yay!
Yes! Yay! Back to Starman!
Yeah, and, you know, he's, it is kind of him tracking down answers, but it's, it's kind of less thinking and more, I'm gonna punch you in the face! Tell me something I don't know or I'll punch you in the face! Which, you know, try using that in school on a test and tell the teacher you're thinking. And I don't think it's gonna work too well.
Yeah. But he does get his answers.
He does. But it's less detection, really, and more punching extortion. People in the face. Extortion, yes. The righteous extorter versus the blue croissant.
Oh, no. What's this issue turning into? Oops.
We're going loopy.
Okay, we're going to come back. Okay. Brooding Ted on the roof like a gargoyle.
Yeah, and then he's got it.
That's literally what he says. So he realizes something after talking to, what's his name? This guy, this Victor, is it Victor or, no. What's this guy's name? This redhead, this guy talking about Wilson May. See, I can't remember all the names. He's involved, right? He's one of the people who went down.
This is Mr. Dooney.
Mr. Dooney. Okay, so I think he was part of that group, wasn't he?
Yes.
Yeah. What group? Ha ha.
We'll see.
Okay. So,
so he's got it, but first he's got to track down the mist on the mist's train, which is on the next page. And, yeah.
And he does it in fashion. He chases after the train with the power of his rod. And he flies, and the mist is actually, I was quite surprised with this, because the mist was actually like genuinely worried that when Ted showed up. It wasn't like, oh, I'm a supervillain, I have superpowers, I can get out of this, but he was like, no, get out of my way, and then he tried to
right,
so
what to do.
I was quite why was he like that? What could, was he? It wasn't as if he couldn't become the mist, you know, because he did become the mist at the end of the scene. So that was strange for me.
Yeah, it is kind of, I guess he saw it as the only, he was only able to beat Starman last time by the help of kind of gas and trickery. But, you know, maybe he knows/believes that in a fair fight between them, he doesn't really stand a chance. And so that's why when he's basically, you know, he doesn't want to be judged by your kind. And jumps off.
Yeah, he jumps. He jumps off, and he's prepared to die. And that was strange for me. But he's prepared to die. So even if he turned into the mist, that misty croissant thing, he would have died if he plunged into the depths of the, not the ocean, but the flowing river, probably crashed on the rocks or something. So he would have died, even though. Like, he looks very incorporeal.
Yeah, I get this whole last mist segment does kind of feel a little awkward is the phrase I'm going to use.
Because
there's a lot of, like, oh, run and go and stop and no and wait. But it's kind of
it's very contrived.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite contrived. It's very... doesn't seem to really fit with, you know, the I want to say the legend of... well, that's probably not the word. The science, what do you call it? I can't place my finger on the word that I'm looking for. Like, you know, the rules of what's been going on.
Yeah, because it's, well, if the mist is intangible when the mist... But does that mean he can't turn his hands and head intangible, or he can, and rather than trying to fight in their first joust, he's more just like, oh no, I've already lost, so I better kill myself. It's just...
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot of little things here that... Yeah, that just don't really feel like they add up. It feels rather than characters acting in the plot following, the plot has already dictated what the characters have to do. Which, I mean, you know, it's kind of how do you approach something, but this one, I think you said it right, it feels leave... It left me feeling it was a bit contrived. Even that little bit, I'm a hero. Heroes don't let their enemies die. That would be as good as murder. And villains do? I shall remember that for next time!
Oh, I got it. You got it. Like, down pat. That voice there. Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, well.
Yeah.
But, you know, but I guess that's the direction they wanted to take for this issue, so.
Yeah. Which that is, you know, there is the argument that could be made of how much of it was meant to be an homage or be kind of a throwback to simpler Golden Age storytelling.
I get it.
Yeah.
Well, we like our fiction sophisticated, so there.
Exactly. Now bring me back my flying hero. And then we got the last few pages of the next evening six men gathered.
And we find out that what exactly the plot was all about, right? So basically, this guy, you know, when I was reading this, I had no idea what was going on, but it was basically that there was this intricate plot that involved a couple of men fighting over the talents of an artist, right? And then basically to get hold of that person's talents, what's his name, contracted the mist to develop a kind of gas, right, to harm that one guy who was his rival. And because that rival only was a heavy brandy drinker, and that's why oost his rival out of the picture, he decided to get the mist to basically kill him off.
It's
that's the plot, I guess.
Yeah, it's, and I mean the thing I kind of. It's a good enough story. It's a good enough plot. You know, it's supposed to be very pulpy and very detective-y. And I guess in a way it works. But we've complimented Robinson in the past of being able to kind of almost seamlessly do exposition dumps into his stories, and I don't think that's the case here.
Mm.
You know, I mean, this is the kind of classic detective fiction whodunit reveal, but it just, I feel like half of these names, this is more than just like the casual name drop. This is the first time we're actually learning anything about any of these characters. Even when I read that, okay, the bad guy was apparently someone named Boyle, I could have flipped back to see, did Boyle show up here?
Mm.
But I'll be honest that I didn't really have enough interest in who Boyle was to even do the cursory flipping back to see if he was shown. It was like, okay, it was Boyle. Gotcha.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, no, I'm satisfied.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, not that we didn't like this issue, right?
No.
But I get it.
Yeah.
So it ends?
Hmm.
Okay, it ends with the six men plus Ted. Five men plus Ted, I think.
Yes.
Not sure. Yeah. Going down. Ted brings them to the Mist's lair. And I think quite unintentionally he brought them into, you know, a trap of sorts where they were tempted to take something, which is the medal. Was it the medal?
The medal.
Yeah. But the thing is, I don't know if any of them actually took the medal, because
it doesn't show that.
Yeah.
I was kind of expecting that as well. Like, are we going to see anyone like picking it up? Are we going to see him knocking it behind?
Yeah. I mean, at least, you know, a scene with somebody's hand on the medal would be nice.
Yeah, something.
Yeah.
And so this little kind of rap summation by The Shade, I think, also hurt the story for me as well. Because we get lots of names, right? And for me, when I kind of realized at some point that, like, wait a minute, a lot of these names are sounding familiar. Aren't these the names of the people who were, yeah, I'm pretty sure these were the names. Yeah. And kind of, you know, excited by my own cleverness. Oh, I'm so smart. And then kind of at the end of the issue, to have such a nice bow wrapped around it, you know, their death for five of them, more than 50 years later, true, you know, but that kind of like, these guys died, remember? Kind of,
yeah.
Like, well, it's kind of like when there's an Easter egg and you notice it, and then if someone just stands by it and points and says, look, it took some of the shine off it.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I know. Yeah. So, the story ends.
Yeah.
That's why. It's not, again, it's not, like, I don't think it was a bad issue.
No, I've
not yet met a bad issue in Starman, but it wasn't my favorite.
Yeah. Not every issue of Starman is perfect. I think, this is our 19th, 18th issue we've read.
It's actually 19th, if you count zero.
Yeah, counting to zero, it's 19. And of those 19, I think this is maybe the second one that I've been less than effusive about. And I think this might be the first one where you've leaned a bit more towards the, it was okay.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because I remember the first one that you mentioned was one that I really liked. The one in the past, but it had a little bit more, I don't know, historical feel to it. The one, you know, Oscar Wilde and stuff like that. So yeah. I really like that one. Yeah. Yeah, but not so much this time in history.
And you know, but I think with both of these, they were trying something new. It definitely added some nice background information to characters. And even if it's not one of the better issues of Starman, it's still an entertaining read. You know,
agreed.
I didn't leave this going like, why did I read? I was like, you know, this wasn't as good as the others, but still worth my time. Where can they find you on the web?
That's a good question, because right now I'm only pretty much active on Twitter and then Instagram. My username is Quek, Q-U-E-K channel, right? And you can find me there. Sometimes you can find me on YouTube. Sometimes I do live broadcasts on you now. It's fun. And also you can find me here with Brent.
Yay.
Comics League International.
Yay!
Yeah, where you can find Brent too, right?
Yes, definitely.
So what's your handle?
You can find me on Twitter at Dead Troubadour. You can find me on Facebook either at the Brent Thomas author page or the Comics League International page. You can also go to my Patreon page, which is patreon.com/Brent Thomas, and you know, if you want to throw a dollar or two my way, that is fantastic. Helps me keep on putting out this content. No pressure. I appreciate it.
Yeah,
I think those are my and you know what, if you're enjoying this show, and I hope you are, why don't you go over to iTunes and take a moment just to rate and review the show. Help us spread the word with a review. And why don't you tell your friends, tell your comic shop buddies. Listen to this show. It's fun.
Yeah. All right. Nice to talk to you about comics today and the blue croissant.
You win.
What? Yeah.
Okay. Bye.
Bye, guys. Bye. Bye. Look at them.
There's a Starman waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd blow our minds. There's a Starman waiting in the sky. He's told us not to blow it, cause he knows it's all worthwhile. He told me, let the children lose it. Let the children use it. Let all the children boogie.